Good evening. I'm in the brilliant city of Glasgow, and I'm with Craig Houston, who is the mover and shaker behind the Sons of Struth campaign. Before we go any further, I will have to remind Craig that he is in a city that was designed and built by a Geordie, Richard Grainger. So when he sorted out that he'd done a good job in Glasgow, he actually started on your castle. So with that note, Craig. Welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on, and I'm really privileged, all leg pulling aside, that you are giving some of your time up to talk to us tonight.
Thanks very much, Michael. Glad to speak to some Newcastle fans. And did you say the guy's name was Ranger, the city architect guy? Is that his surname?
Did I say that? Aye, I suppose I did, didn't I? Aye, John Ranger. Aye, there was it was Granger, but that's not far from it. Nice one. I think the Rangers Football Club, that great old historic club, and like our great and historic club, has had a bit of a malignant force attached to it in recent years. Craig, do you just want to tell us about the history of Mike Ashley at Rangers?
Okay. Our club went into administration 2012, and the new owner was a man, strange name for a guy buying Rangers, was called Charles Green. And he set about looking for initial investors to put some money into his pot to enable him to purchase the club. And Mike Ashley was one of those. At the time, because he owned a club down south, he went to the SFA and he asked them, you know, if it was okay to invest and what sort of size of shareholding that he could have. He never had more than 10% shareholding, but for some peculiar reason had loads of allies round about him, who, some of them we don't even know their names. There was strange names. Margarita, Blue Pitch Holdings had shares in Rangers. Nobody has been able to identify definitely who these people are, even to this day. And between them, owned enough to control our boardroom. And we, through, you know, dissecting accounts, etc., we found out facts like our strip deal. We were getting 4 and 5 pence for every £10 spent in the shop. We ended up with a 7-year rolling contract at those sort of terms. So obviously when we had issues with the people owning our club, Ashley was in our sights. We doing business, it has to be fair for both parties. So we don't have a problem having a strip deal where the other party makes margin, that's business. But when it's so lopsided, and then we started looking into other things, and we found out that the superstore at Ibrox was signed over to Sports Direct on a 10-year lease at £1 per year. And that was when Limbias and Leach were up here on their board in the CEO's capacity. And these deals were signed a month before these guys were getting voted off our board. The dogs in the street knew the day was close, and they started doing just stupid deals like that. He was lending the club money when he had the opportunity to invest. There was share issues which he refused to buy into, and at the same time buy shares in the private market. So for those who are not up in business, that basically means he bought shares and paid someone else the money. The money went to them when there was shares available from inside the club, which would have saw the money go to the club. And then weeks later, because the club was suffering financially, he would oddly come up with a loan, and it would have some outrageous terms attached to it, and he would get free advertising. And the one that got to the heartstrings of our fans was when he tried to get the stadium as a collateral for a loan that we actually didn't need, because there were other investors publicly stating they would give Rangers money, an investment, and give us shares back. And they attempted to take loans with our stadium as collateral. And for a club whose fans witnessed administration, can you imagine going into administration again for a loan you didn't need and losing your actual stadium? So these were some of the things that we were learning about Ashley. Other things he'd done, he bought the stadium naming rights for £1. Never took up the option, right enough, but how ridiculous is that? You think the name of St James's or a, you know, Ibrox Stadium or a Hampden Park or a Wembley being worth £1 is just insane. But that was a measure of all the deals that were done. in Ashley's name, sports director, the only benefactor of any of them, and Rangers football clubs were a distant memory to him. He didn't care. We managed to get rid of that board eventually when we had Rangers fans buying large shares and eventually having enough to control the boardroom, and these guys get flung out our club. But we were still tied with the historic deals they'd done, like a 7-year rolling contract for strips and 10 years for the shop for a pound, and all these things. So 3 years ago, we got rid of them, and we're still trying to work through these deals today.
Thanks, Craig. I'm sure our listeners, the majority will be Newcastle United supporters, will be kind of the wheels will be whirring inside their heads in terms of thinking how that might be impacting on our club. We've got no evidence to say that it is or it isn't, because it's a lot more opaque than it was at Rangers. Craig, football supporters are very kind of sentimental about the strip and the badge and stuff like that. Can you tell me a little bit about what he did with the club crest and the other kind of intellectual property of Rangers?
Yeah, for one of the loans that we actually didn't need, he took control of the intellectual properties, even old crests, our logo, motto, ready, all these things, and even the blooming mascot, everything. And it gets signed over to him, so he totally controlled anything that we can make money from. They set up a company called Rangers Retail Limited, and this was fantastic. This was one of the best deals he'd done. It was an absolute peach where he'd done it. We were sold the idea that Rangers owned 51% of Rangers Retail and Sports Direct 49%. Well, we weren't told. Rangers shares were B shares. Their shares were A shares, and A shares got double the vote. So although on paper and in the newspapers we were led to believe Rangers controlled it, we didn't. It was an absolute carve-up yet again. And it could go on forever and tell you 100 different stories like that.
So, football fans, they're no different on Glasgow than they are in Newcastle and Tyneside, etc. All this stuff's boring, and it's not stuff we want to talk about. We want to talk about the new fullback, or whether or not he's going to play five at the back and three up front, and all of these kinds of things. Craig, how did you get the message over to the Rangers support in terms of what was happening to their club?
We started off with leaflets, old school, and me and my mate that started Sunday's Truth, we thought we'll go out, we'll tell some Rangers fans some stuff, and we'll last 2 weeks. And it just evolved from there, and then we soon bought into the idea that social media was a good outlet, and the numbers we were getting and reading our articles, etc., was above most of the big press up here, the Daily Record, the Evening Times, etc. We were outstripping them with hits on our stories as they were coming out. So that was the main way of doing it. As soon as we started the protests at the stadium, the press all wanted to know us, and we really found it quite easy to get into the mainstream press up here, TV, radio and newspaper. Probably easier because it was one of the big two up here. There is really only two clubs up here, so more difficult probably for other fans. And we made the headlines. We were controlling what was getting written in the front and back pages. We ended up better at PR than the PR guys they were paying ridiculous amounts of money to. And it was just hard work. And it was not getting put off when people were telling you were a liar, and people telling you were wrong, and how dare you attack your club. We never attacked Rangers Football Club. We attacked the people that were ripping off Rangers Football Club, and just getting on with the job. We had to get the message out. We got the message out. We never at any point got 100% backing from 100% of Rangers fans. That wasn't important. We just had to get enough to believe what we were doing was correct and join us when we were doing protests and boycotts and any actions that we were doing.
Thanks, Craig. And obviously, Sons of Struth has risen to be one of the most prominent supporters organisation in the country. And Craig's too modest to say it, but he's been a driving force behind that. And it's a real asset to Newcastle United supporters now, who are pulling things together and starting campaigning. Maybe later than we should have done, etc. But Craig, in terms of your advice and counsel, For those who are organising things now and pulling campaigns together, could you kind of describe what your roadmap would be in terms of building up a supporters organisation as effective as Sons of Struth, and maybe some of the pitfalls that they should avoid as well?
You just need to ignore the politics. There's no such thing as an Uber fan, but there's too many people think they are the Uber fan, and they don't want somebody. I was unknown, nobody'd heard of me. I'd been following Rangers quietly for 30-odd years when we started Sons of Struth. My starting position was zero. Financially, exposure, name, nobody knew anything about me, but just persistence. And if somebody wants to tell you you're doing something wrong, ignore them and move on. Go and find the people that are telling you they're right and you believe in you. And it doesn't matter if it's, well, as you know, we've got Sons of Struth, we've got Rangers Supporters Trust, we had Rangers First, we had all these different things at the time, and it just didn't matter who was doing it. What mattered is somebody done it. And we were fortunate that we got the majority of the established parties involved quite early, and they bought into what we were doing, and we had them on side. But the ones who didn't come on side, don't argue with them. Don't waste energy with them. Just go and do what you know is right and forget the politics.
Thanks for that, Craig. I think that's wise words and something that we would recognise it at Newcastle, where there is a queue of people who are ready to piss up the leg of anyone that wants to do something something positive to challenge the cancer that's inside of our club at the moment. And I don't use that word lightly, and anyone that knows me will know that I won't use that word lightly. But I'm just pleased to welcome Mark Dingwall, who is the editor of the long-running Rangers fanzine Follow Follow, which I notice has just celebrated its 30th anniversary this week, I believe. So,
well, he says he's only 40.
Well, I know, but
he's only been reading it for 25 years.
So welcome, Mark, and it's great to have you here. I really appreciate you being here, and you're a lad who's had quite a few dealings with probably Newcastle, well, definitely Newcastle's most hated person, Mike Ashley, as well. Do you want to tell us about what your perception of the man is and what he's done at Rangers?
When I first came across him, I think, was when him, our sports direct, bought Umbro, which Rangers were involved with at the time. And I remember our late lamented chief executive, Martin Bain, who achieved so much down at Sunderland. And he said to me, he said, Mike Ashley's a destroyer of brands, you know, and it's a problem that he's getting involved with Umbro. Because, you know, essentially, he might make money, but in terms of brands, he destroys them. You know, he sucks out what he wants from them and does whatever he does with them. So that was the first time I came across Ashley. And then, obviously, as he allied himself with what we called the Spivs, who are in charge of our club, then his behaviour's been absolutely outrageous. You know, getting the naming rights for the stadium for £1, taking security over the stadium, and you know, the various loans he gave us, which, you know, we could only see it been worked up to a point where, you know, the club would effectively be refinanced, which would involve, you know, squeezing out all the small shareholders, him running it as a personal fiefdom. And I think the vista we had was that the club, to refinance itself, would sell the stadium, flog off the training ground, and would be essentially renting the ground from some American pension company, and that, you know, what had been our Jewel in the Crown, our retail operation, which in the old days used to make 3.5 to 4 million a year, would be hived off to him, and we'd be limping along as we have been under this current onerous contract of, you know, 150, 200 grand a year, you know, a pittance. And so that's what we see, you know, Ashley is, by his behaviour of him and his executives. Then I certainly would share your characterisation of him as a cancer. And if you look at what his company's doing, you know, the other clubs he's getting involved with, you know, running their retail operations, their shops at other clubs in England, then I would say to fans of those clubs, you know, initially you might get a few bob more than you expected. In the long run, he'll attempt to do to you what he's attempted to do to us.
Well, you know, if something works for you, you try and do it again. As I remember Craig telling me once when I was up here on another trip to Glasgow. Just jumping forward a bit now in terms of seeing where Rangers are at in terms of the relationship with Mike Ashley. I noticed there was a court case recently. Which one of you lads wants to tell me?
Both are probably going to tell you the exact same thing about that as well. The court case was hopefully to be the last dealings we had with him. We signed over from a 7-year rolling contract to a 12-month contract last summer. And like any Ashley deal, there's no non-disclosures all over it. Some of the details we weren't aware of at the time. And we were told it was a 12-month contract, and we were led to believe that would be it. A few months later, our accounts came out, and it quite clearly showed that there was a £3 million fee paid to Sports Direct. That was one term that we weren't aware of. Our board knew, however, that obviously that would need to come out in accounts. The other thing that didn't become publicly knowledgeable until the court case was at the end of that contract, there was a matching right that Sports Direct had to ability to match any offer we get for a third party, and that's what's still getting argued just now. They put an injunction on Rangers to stop us doing any deal with anybody. That got lifted last week or the week before, and the court case will go wherever the court case goes. I'm quite confident it will still go in our favour, but it's a legal battle that could go either way. So that's where we are. But see, when you think the stuff we've went through, and it's horrible sitting here talking about memories from 3-4 years ago that you happen to forget and just enjoy Stevie Gerrard for a while, but as a football fan to think back, when you consider what he'd done to your club, owning 10% of the club, the thing that horrifies me and should horrify your fans is, what is he doing to your club that you don't know about? And unfortunately you might never know, or when you do get to know, it's when eventually it's sold. And like our club, all these erroneous contracts start coming out when they start to get renewed. And how any self-respecting Newcastle fan can sit in their arse and no join newsboys that want to do some action, I'll never know. I worked in the northeast of England. My father was worked in shipbuilding. My grandfather worked in coal mining. Very similar to probably most of the people listening to this podcast. And when I sat in the northeast of England, when I worked down there, if I seen a Cockney, particularly a fat, gross, greedy one, coming in and taking a stool off you in your Irish club or some sort, you'd soon take it off him. Yet, I see apathy from a lot of your support. I see a few good guys try to do good things and generate. And to be fair, that mob who's pulled a 3,000 last week at the shop, fantastic. And it needs more. And it doesn't need to be, he's done a protest last year, it doesn't need to be another protest in a year's time. It needs to be every single living minute, every single day. Because to have one protest a year, regardless of getting 3,000 or that sort of number, it's not enough. It's a great start, and that's what you should be looking at. And the people who maybe sat in their arse that day and didn't bother getting into the city centre, just do it the next time. The next time the guys that want to do something, don't sit and argue about the finer detail of a protest. Get bloody on the streets and do something about it, because it will frighten you, and you won't be frightened totally until he's away and you start seeing what he's doing to your club. But consider what he's done to us with 10%, what's he done with you with 100%.
I think if you look at like Craig was mentioning there, the current contract, I mean, things were supposed to be sorted out last summer, and Sports Direct through the joint venture company eventually paid £1.2 million. That was money that they had simply retained and refused to pay out as a dividend. So it wasn't like a bonus for us. It was money that, you know, Rangers were owed. But that's the way he does business. Just refused to pay it, full stop, starving the club of money. And like Craig says, I think once you find actually get to see the books in years to come, the damage that's been done to your club, it'll be undermined, opportunities lost, it'll be incredible. In terms of the fans, I wouldn't be quite as critical as your fans as others, because, I mean, one of the things that helped us with the boycott, frankly, was we weren't in top division, so therefore, you know, if people were guaranteed to get their Celtic tickets, I think we would have had a tougher sale. You guys are playing, you know, Liverpool, Manchester United, Man City. It's difficult. But don't get angry with fans that haven't seen the light yet. What we call, and amongst the kind of fan activists up here, is people have got to make the journey. And so one of the things we did with the campaigns we had against the Spivs was that we attacked in different fronts. So, for instance, If you wanted to read a blog that was, you know, very much into the finances, you could do that. If you wanted something that was short and sweet, we gave that. We would carpet bomb the entire stadium. I mean, to leaflet Ibrox normally, if you do 5,000, it was that was good going. We set the task of getting everybody leafleted, which is 50,000. I mean, sometimes we're going out leafleting, you know, 50, 60, 100 people to achieve that. And the way that we did it, it was like educational. So if you handed out a leaflet or one of the big boards to hand up, one side was very short, and the other side was a lot more detailed, explaining, you know, the background to it. I think the beauty of what happened with Sons of Struth was there was other groups that were all doing their own thing, their different ways. And the beauty of it, Sons of Struth, was it just kicked in the front door, and it was
cheers, Mark.
and it was quite simple. We know these people are bad for the club. Get them out. The first question people would come back with, yeah, what would we replace them with? And the answer was, we don't give a fuck, because it will be better than what we've got just now, because we reckon these people are thieves, they're bad for the club, and what's bad for Rangers is bad for you on a personal level. You know, your the time, the money you've invested, the emotion of supporting the club, these people are literally taking the piss. In the past, there seemed to have been this kind of relationship between fans and directors where part of the deal was they got a bit of hassle, they put in their money, and they were the bright businessmen. Right? That's been changed, because what people are doing now is they're taking out millions, you know, paying themselves huge salaries and paying themselves dividends. And that's what's changed in British football. You know, there's no benign dictatorships anymore. You've now got people who are motivated to make for themselves and their related companies millions and millions of pounds. And I think that's the problem that Newcastle have got, where by any measure you're a big club, but you are relatively localised compared with, say, you know, Liverpool or Manchester United. And so Newcastle can't run and make a profit for other people. You've got to reinvest it in the club, and you've got to maximise what you've got, the loyalty of the fans, the geographic tightness of your support, and, you know, your unique heritage and your culture. And that means that Newcastle, if you harness all that, it makes you punch above your weight. And if you've got people who don't understand that, don't care about it, or are essentially ripping the club off or missing opportunities, then, you know, you'll stagnate. So it's not nobody up here is offering you an easy solution, because it took a lot of our fans, and I mean, let's be honest, a lot of our own activists, quite a time to realise what was going on. I mean, I could sense, like our former player John Brown and Bomber's attitude was, I know there's something wrong here, I don't know quite what's wrong, but it stinks. And we were all like that, and then just gradually as things went on, we started to find the evidence of what was been done in the background, you know. So you've got a long way to go, because it will be huge amounts of money involved because of the way that the English Premier League's organised. I suspect that you might wake up one day to find that you've been sold to, you know, some investor from overseas. But when that day comes, then if you're a properly organised support, you can actually say to those investors, if you want to maximise your investment, if you want to have a thriving club that's a fantastic advert for you and whatever other businesses you've got, then work in partnership with us, because we made life difficult for Ashley. You've got to create the conditions where it's easy for how many people to go. You know, do they really want hassle all the time? No. Do they want Sports Direct business overshadowed by Newcastle? No, they don't. So you guys can cause enough of a stink to make it easier for them to decide to go.
Very interesting that, Mark, and I think that is a very wise counsel for our support at this moment in the club's history. One of the things that Newcastle fans are very sensitive about is how they are perceived by the media, and there doesn't seem to be a day going by just lately where the most unlikely of people are commenting on our club's fortunes. So today we noticed Dennis Wise, you know, who loves Newcastle United, doesn't he? You know, he's kind of the poison dwarf of English football, and we've had Steve Parrish and Simon Jordan and Andy Gray and Richard Keys all opining on how Ashley runs our club, and strangely they have a very, very positive view of how he runs the club. Did you experience anything like that in terms of black propaganda, etc.? Sorry, I'll pass over to Craig.
We had whole radio stations who would not say a negative word about him, and it was funny because the amount of relationships I built up personally, and like folk like Mark who had more experience than me had previously with people in every newspaper and every TV station, but you would have a particular radio station that would never phone him, never phone me, never phone any of the main guys, and they were infested with people that were wheeling out from left, right and centre to say, by the way, this board aren't that bad. And you're going to need to put up with that, but you've got to get into the mind of the fans that Dennis Wise might be wrong. We were very lucky as well that we had ex-players, because ex-players are very important. Nobody knew who Craig Houston was 4 or 5 years ago, but they all knew who John Brown was, Nacho Novo, Michael Moles, Marco Negri, all these people who we managed to get out to say they're bad. So you need to get on with the job. So what if Dennis Wise says Mike Ash is okay?
So we've got a certain number 9, ex-former Newcastle United striker called Alan Shearer, you might have heard of him, who is a host on the Match of the Day show on Saturdays normally, and he was pretty explicit in his criticism of Mike Ashley. But we also have kind of people like Shola Ramiobi and Peter Beardsley, and who seem to have taken the Sports Direct chilling and caused consternation amongst the ranks. How do you think supporters should respond to those sorts of situations, Mark?
I wouldn't get too carried away by the cult of celebrity. The way I tend to look at it is, most people, if they're susceptible to receiving your message, they're susceptible to it. And the people who appear to be either puppets or paid puppets, they'll be gradually ignored by the fans as they wake up. One of the things I would give advice to yourself and other what I would call activist fans is read everything, read the accounts, read the transcripts of court cases, because it's in them that you find the nuggets. Look, for instance, look, Rangers, when you read the court case, suddenly you find there's another 3 or 4 court cases going on at the same time, but they've been subject to injunctions, they would call them in England, so they can't even report from the court. So you see how they do their business through these little glimpses, and you can get them through the accounts, you can get them through court reports, and no doubt there'll be loads of Newcastle fans who are working for lawyers, accountants, the newspapers, and you'll get information there. I mean, one of the things that we found what they did was they put an awful lot of effort into finding, making sure that they had a point man. This is the Spibs had a point man in virtually every newspaper, so that he would be given information by the Spibs, so that he was seen as like the expert in the Rangers situation, but of course, very biased expert. And so when we're trying to put stuff in there, as soon as we're launching a campaign, the opposition's getting alerted by the mainstream media. So what we did was we created our own media, and we had a situation where we actually found some of the emails were referring to Craig, me, ex-journalist called David Leggett, Chris Graham is another fans activist. We were being described as the arch agitators, and it was, the tone of them was quite simply, we've got to get these clowns in court. We've got to wait for them to slip up, get them into court and shut them up. And, we had that with loads and loads of legal threats. I think I had, I don't know if they've got it down south, but you can get a senior policeman can sign off for an internet warrant to get information about stuff on your website. So I was getting that harassment day and day. I had 17 visits from the police. Craig had threats of losing his home and his shoes and suits and whatever.
Super, 300,000, arrested 4 times without charge. Just ridiculous. Just things that a standard fan shouldn't have to put up with just for standing up for his club. But going back to your point about how do we combat Dennis Wise saying one thing and Shearer saying another, you're no different from the majority of normal fans that support Newcastle, Mike. You get it. You can smell shite when it's put in front of you. you don't get hit up on it. Just get enough stuff out there that's the truth. The truth will always shine through. And if Peter Beardsley or any of these other characters want, and Dennis Wise want to be the salesman for Mike Ashley, because you know there's some benefit for them somewhere along the line, just let them. The fans aren't, football fans are not stupid. So don't worry about it too much. Don't get hit up on it. That's not your fight. Your fight's the end game, and the end game is getting rid of him. And you just need to be consistent and constant and truthful. Nobody can defeat the truth.
So we're on to final words now, because we've been going 30 minutes and it has been absolutely brilliant. I'm really thankful to Craig and Mark here, who have inspired me actually when they've been talking. I think it's a Glasgow twang, isn't it? It's a leadership accent, isn't it? I'll give the last word to Mark in terms of his kind of shout out to Newcastle supporters in terms of what we should do next.
What I would say to you is, you can get bamboozled by facts and figures and financial rigmarole, but you know your club far better than any wide boy from London or his acolytes. You know that for the long term, best interest in Newcastle, he has to go. People that support him, they have to go. And that you might not, I mean, when we finally get rid of the Spivs, you know, it hasn't been a fairy story. It's still, you know, there's another fight around the corner. But your club has been hamstrung by being involved with this guy, and so if you've got a duty to go to support Newcastle, support your team. I don't have any problems with that, but I would say to you, make an effort, whether it's phoning a radio station, writing to a newspaper, taking part in the protests, as you've got to get this guy out, because your club will not flourish the way that it can do while he's still involved.
There's only one thing that Mike Ashley cares for in the whole universe, and it's Sports Direct. So, guess what you should go for? It's the only thing it gets to.
We've heard it, folks. I'd just like to thank Mark, and I'd like to thank Craig, who I think are shining examples of what we should be following at Newcastle United. And I think I'd like to thank them both for giving their time. Two great lads. I know Craig a lot better than I know Mark. And I have to say that both of them are absolutely live and breathe their football club, like many of us live and breathe our club. And thanks again, lads. It's been a privilege to listen to you tonight. Thank you.